Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
Coming up on the Free For All, millennials in the workplace. Maybe you're afraid of them. Maybe you are one. Maybe you've never listened to a voicemail in your entire life. Joining us to talk about millennials in the workplace, a real millennial, Lindsay Gelman of the Wall Street Journal, coming up, Free For All.
This is Free For All from the Wall Street Journal. Now, here's Jason Gay.
Hey, it's your good friend Jason, back from a exciting trip to the West Coast. Joining me first on the Free For All, Lindsay Gelman, reporter of the Wall Street Journal. And Lindsay today has a story in the Wall Street Journal that's one of those stories, you know, every once in a while, if you're lucky, you get one. It's the story that everyone's talking about. It just shows up on your Facebook 100 times. It's all over Twitter. Your mother sends it to you. Your father sends it to you. Your boss tells you to read it. Because it's just one of those stories that you kind of can't believe, and yet it's true. The headline is Helping Bosses Decode Millennials for $20,000 an Hour. It's about the strange but true world of intergenerational consulting that is happening in workplaces and corporations around America as decision makers try to solve the riddle that is the new employee generation. And joining me, Lindsay Gelman, thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So this story is just blowing up everywhere.
Well,
but how long have you been working on it for?
A few weeks now, a couple months.
It
kind of came organically as a result of – so I write a lot of – I cover business schools, but I also write stories about young people in the workplace.
Yeah.
And I end up talking to a lot of these consultants as sort of expert voices in these stories, explaining sort of one hiring trend or another.
Sure.
And then the more kind of pitches I started to get from them, I was like, this is a growing group of people here. And, you know, my editor and I were chatting and – she was like, I wonder how much these people make. And I was like, I'll ask them. So
Ordinarily accustomed to giving that information, but you got it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, not everyone said, and the $20,000 figure doesn't apply to everyone we spoke to. And it's kind of an upper limit figure,
right.
So it's kind of up to that. So, again, you know, caveats here and there. But, yeah, no, the corporations are paying a lot of money for these people, and they have a wide set of, you know, different qualifications. Some are millennials saying, hey, this is what we want. And others are people who are older saying, hey, let me explain to you.
But there's a demand for this. I mean, the bottom line is that there is a interest in the corporate world to figure out what the heck to do with millennials because of retention, because of productivity, all that stuff.
Yes, it's retention. I think retention is probably the main issue.
Kids don't stay on their jobs, Lindsay.
Yeah, I guess not. But retention and also attraction in the first place.
Like, yeah.
Please come work for us and then please stay. And then I think engagement, kind of productivity, as you said, sort of a tertiary concern. But it's this definitely a demand for this kind of advice. And it's born of, you know, to be frank, a desperation on the part of a lot of these companies.
I have to imagine that your typical executive sort of begins from the position of, who the heck do these kids think they are? I cannot believe that they're so entitled that they want these kinds of things. And then basically, after a while, realize that they have this problem that's not going to go away with just sort of this stubborn position, and they have to figure out a way to meet millennials halfway. Is that fair to say? Then that's part of what's going on here. They're not trying to shove some strategy past these younger employees. They're trying to do something to keep them there.
I think you're right. I mean, I think it takes different forms. So there's sort of this window dressing stuff that's like, you know, the foosball tables and the free snacks. Like, there's kind of been a backlash against that. You know, that's not working. But, you know, some companies, I did a story a couple months ago about with my colleague Dan Huang, and we looked at Wall Street specifically and what they're doing. And what they're doing, they're trying to go beyond that, and they're trying to, you know, rethink, for example, career trajectories, paths to promotion, shortening those. So more than just kind of cosmetic stuff. And I think that's probably where they'll see, you know, the most change in terms of that retention as they make deeper changes.
I mean, the typical pattern in many workplaces, including journalism, I might add, is that when you get hired, you're kind of like a nobody. You know, you're the grunt. You're going to get the worst assignments. You're going to have to do the copying. You're going to have to do the, you know, running off for lunches and waters. And, you know, there's kind of, you know, a vague hazing quality to it that is supposed to be character building. There seems to be, and again, I sort of hate generalizing about age groups, but there seems to be a resistance to that. Is that fair to say among the millennial employees that they don't sort of see the value in suffering for a couple of years if it gets them further down the road?
I think you're hitting on something that I found to be true, but there's sort of a slight twist or nuance to it. So, look, I mean, again, generalizing about 80 million people is just, you know, is, you know, call it what you, you know, it's probably not the best move. But in terms of data that's been gathered, you know, about people of this age, and full disclosure, I'm one of them. I think the idea is not so much an aversion to grunt work or paying one's dues, but to actually have a sense of what's coming at the end of that. And so if the idea that you're paying dues for something that is not appealing in the first place, if you don't want to be your boss, then what are you doing?
What is the Wall Street Journal doing for you, Lindsay, to make sure that you are
motivated?
They have
done a lot for me, Jason. Yeah. A lot, yes.
How is the journal's millennial retention strategy?
The journal is a fantastic place to be, and I'm really grateful.
They have not gotten you a foosball table, I believe.
No, I'm told that one is coming. No, just kidding.
And what's the free food situation? I see that coffee machine, which, you know, we don't have to say anything about.
I believe we have coffee. I think there's milk available.
Milk?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so when you just want to get a nice toasty glass of milk, you can go do that anytime
cold
you
milk.
Want. 24 hours.
They've got milk in a fridge, so it's good.
There are stories, anecdotes in your story that they're almost too good to be true, and that they are true. There's an executive in there who talks about the time that he gave a millennial a 3-month sabbatical to go snowboard. It was competitive snowboard, I believe. It's not just, you know, willy-nilly snowboarding.
So it's even more incredible than that. He wanted to accompany his friend to, as his friend competitively snowboarded. He wanted to cheer his friend
on. Got it.
That
so was he was a snowboard groupie. He wasn't even the competitive snowboarder.
That's right.
That's amazing. And the guy didn't come back. That's the best part.
That's right. Yeah. No, I mean, it's and I was talking to, you know, that executive after I interviewed him, and we were just sort of touching base about it. And he was saying, like, the fact that the employee didn't come back, you know, that was almost a secondary kind of point in his mind. The ask he felt was just so just different than, you know, other things he's experienced so far in his career. Just the idea that, like, it's legitimate to ask for something like that. And then, I mean, the fact that he didn't come back is like, oh my God. But so I don't know.
there's the Red Robin. What do they make? Gourmet hamburgers what do they make?
They make burgers.
Burgers. Okay.
Yeah.
So that company is in the story as well, and they talk about some of the things that they have altered to appeal to millennials. One was that they were sort of doing their company group meetings off-site at a comedy club, which was kind of hilarious. And then the other one, which I loved, was that they were eliminating meetings on Fridays. You cannot have a meeting at Red Robin on Fridays. I support this policy for any generation.
Yeah, I mean, so look, so this is what they did. This is in their corporate office. So this is not, you know, people in the restaurant. Exactly. So these are, you know, kind of corporate employees. What they did was, and they did this for everyone, not just for their young workers. They said, okay, you can either take every Friday afternoon off or every other Friday off the whole day. And they started doing that, and it was going well, and people were doing it. People of all ages were doing it. And then people who were taking those days off felt that they were missing out on meetings and things that were going on while their colleagues were in the office, or feeling like they had to dial in to, you know, conference calls and things like that. And so they were like, you know what, to actually enable people to take this day off, we're not going to do any
So it wasn't meetings. A pure stance against meetings. It was a way of sort of neutering Fridays so you weren't missing.
That's exactly
critical.
Right.
Yeah. But you shouldn't have a meeting on a Friday afternoon anyway, right?
I mean,
come on. What are we talking about? What's your email inbox look like today from people reading this thing?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people. So I'm getting different categories of responses, you know, boomers like, and other
what the
people.
Heck and
yeah,
what the F?
This is ridiculous. Got a lot of pitches from millennial experts who are
yes, of course.
Wanted to have been in the story.
Some, and, I imagine, will do it for even, we'll do it for $10,000 an hour,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, that's, no, that's that's definitely a flavor of message I'm getting. And yeah, look, I mean, writing these stories, you know, is always tricky because the idea is to tell a business story about what companies are doing. Yeah. And people tend to get caught up in, you know, the stereotypes and the things like that. And, you know, we are writing about how companies are reacting to such a large group
sure.
of people. So it's interesting to kind of report on their responses.
I mean, the big picture here might be that what millennials are asking for, frankly, is kind of a work-life balance. You know, a number of generations grew up with the idea that the person who worked the most and worked on the weekends and worked late at night, that was the way to get ahead. And in degrees, all the things that are being requested or considered here by companies are things to sort of have a more well-rounded life. And is there any possibility that, you know, geezers like me will look back to our millennial generation and sort of thank them for kind of underlining the importance of that kind of balance?
I think that that's a really good point and one that I've been hearing from a lot of people I've spoken to, both the consultants and, you know, company leaders. And they're saying, like, what this generation is asking for, if the generation can be said to be asking for something, are a list of things that would benefit anyone and that yeah. people have wanted for years. And the difference is that this group of people is more vocal about making those requests
yeah.
and companies are in the business now of trying to accommodate them. And so it's just a little bit of a tipping of the scale in terms of the dynamic, who's asking for what and whether companies are receptive, and sort of both pieces of that puzzle have fallen into place and there are actually changes being made. So it's not like anyone's reinventing the wheel here with,
sure.
you know, a brand new idea for
right.
work and life. But I think companies are more receptive and, you know, younger people are more comfortable speaking up, you know, for better or for worse.
Is there something happening in the workplace in America right now where corporations are realizing that creating some more progressive policies? We've seen some changes recently with regard to leave, maternity leave, paternity leave, so on. And getting publicity for that is a just positive move for the company just to have out there?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of really interesting reporting being done about that. And in other countries, it's something that's kind of old news. But in
yeah.
the U.S., we're sort
say
of
the least, yeah.
like coming around to it and making that sort of family leave or child leave, child care leave sort of, you know, gender neutral. So father might be able to take it. A woman might be able to take more. This is something that I think first Silicon Valley is sort of waking up to, and then, you know, there are ripple effects from there.
Yeah.
You know, people have different philosophies about it. I've heard, you know, experts in this space say this is an easy win for companies because this is kind of employer branding marketing. You know,
yeah.
we'll offer this to you, and they doubt that too many people will take them up on the full leave.
Right, exactly.
So,
haven't there been companies too that say, like, you know, we don't have a vacation policy. Take all the time you want.
And the
like,
unlimited vacation,
but
yes.
But it's self-policing because, of course, people are like, I don't know, what am I supposed to do? And in a weird way, it actually kind of end up taking less vacation. This is not the most polite question to ask somebody on the spot, but how old are you if you are a millennial?
I'm 26.
You're 26. Now, I hear a lot about the idea that what a millennial craves more in the workplace is also sort of, you know, as you described, you know, knowing what's at the end of the road. But do you think you want gratification? I always feel like newspapers are, you know, sort of in the instant gratification business for employees because you're always kind of doing something and it shows up and it's in the paper and maybe it's on the front page if you're lucky. It's a good business for somebody who's seeking that kind of like carrot and stick regularly. Do you think it is that kind of environment for a young person that they don't have to like, I don't know, they're not looking at it 12 years before they do X?
Right. I mean, so yeah, I mean, first of all, I really enjoy being a journalist and being a newspaper reporter, and to be at a place like The Journal is a great place to be. It's a great place, you know, to be at any age. I started here about 3 years ago as a news assistant.
Okay.
And I was...
So you were the person doing the scut work.
There was a little more administrative work there, and yeah. I wasn't writing stories for the main paper. I was writing for a personal finance supplement that's since been discontinued. But
Because of you.
Yes. and so, yeah, there's definitely, I think, a learning curve and a you know, set of tiers to any industry. And, yeah, I mean, in terms of being able to... So one of the kind of recurring themes in these conversations with these millennial consultants and the business leaders is, you know, finding ways to let junior people see an impact. Yeah. So whether, you know, that impact is, like, changing the world or not is going to vary by company, but at least seeing an impact in, you know, in the day-to-day business or understanding how you fit in. And look, seeing your byline in the paper or on the site is a clear way to know that you've contributed something. And so that's been really gratifying.
I imagine you were coming up. Did you go to journalism school?
No.
Good choice. No offense to anyone who went to journalism school, but, you know, I'll leave. You can call me. I'll tell you my name. I imagine, though, as you were making your decision to chase this, you had people say to you, what are you going into? You were like stepping onto the Titanic. Are you crazy to get into the newspaper business? You know, what did you think of that?
Yes. So, yes, it's, you know, definitely was made clear to me and, you know, by many different people of many different ages and different industries that this is a tough business. And I think a lot of businesses are tough businesses. Yeah. And, you know, around the time, you know, that I graduated from high school and then started, you know, to go to college. I mean, the financial markets collapsed and that became a tough business. So it's hard to know, you know, what industry is kind of bulletproof and it changes year to year. So, yeah, no, but I mean, this is a tough one. I think that my attitude was one that, you know, I think the industry is in flux.
Yeah.
And there was, you know, whereas some of the print positions or some of those kind of nuances or valences to a career might be evaporating, there are online opportunities. So I think I was optimistic, if not maybe perhaps a little naive in doubling down on it. But anyway.
A little bit of naivete, never hurt anybody in journalism. But I also have to imagine that, you know, journalism still is a pretty hierarchical environment. I mean, you know, the editor and the editor under the editor and the editor and so on. Fewer and fewer editors, which I think is a shame, but not at the Journal. Journal's perfect. Every news organization, every media organization is desperate to understand strategies and understand, solve these same questions, frankly, of what millennials want, what younger people want, what can potentially create new subscriptions and subscribers and readers and so on. And it behooves any organization to sort of listen to these people and put them in part of the conversation, because if you don't, you're toast, right?
I mean, yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I mean, I think that, look, they're in a news organization and, you know, I'm no expert on running a news organization, of course, but there has to be a hierarchy. I mean, we're lucky to have editors who keep us in line and ask good questions and, you know, shape our work and guide stories. So without that sort of thing,
Do you Snapchat?
Yeah, of course.
Do you listen to voicemail?
Yeah.
Wow. Old school.
I don't enjoy it, though.
You don't enjoy listening to it.
I don't.
But you kind of have to.
I have to.
It's part of your job. Hey, Lindsay, thanks so much for being here. The story, if you haven't been sent it 50 times already, which I'm sure you have, is in today's Wall Street Journal. $20,000 an hour. That's a pretty good job for anybody. Thanks so much for being here, Lindsay.
Oh, thanks for having me.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.